If you have a financial question for Peg or Bruce, you can call this number, keep in mind, 24-7, 888-6-ADVICE. You can also email those questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. During the show right now, you can call or text our studio line at this number, 651-461-9226. Now here's Senior Vice President, Financial Advisor Peg Webb, along with the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group, Financial Advisor Bruce Helmer. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Denny. Good morning, Bruce.
Hey, we're all together. That's great. We're having some gremlins or technical difficulties this morning, but here we are. And Denny Long, the legendary Denny Long, long time no see. I didn't mean to be discourteous. I was late for something. Denny and I frequent the same grocery store and ran into each other yesterday, and I did a quick hello, hug, and then said, I got to go. But good to talk to you, buddy.
Yeah, you as well. I feel like we live in a small town because I see Bruce at the grocery store. Oh, well, and yeah. It was good to see you. I understand. I understand you were in a rush, so...
Yeah, that's not the first time we've met there unexpectedly at the same store. So, hey, Danny and listeners, today Peg and I are going to talk about aligning money with meaning. And what do we mean by that? We're going to talk a little bit about setting purposeful goals. We're going to talk about core values. And we do this all the time on the show, Peg, but I don't know that we can ever do it too often, because as I'm out there in the world encountering other people, encountering prospects, even other advisors, other people in our industry, it is not lost on me that what we take for granted as an obvious thing that we should be doing as advisors, getting to know our clients, getting to understand their core values, getting to understand what's important to them and what they are trying to accomplish, not everybody in our world does this. And you know, we take it for granted and assume everybody thinks like this and everybody does this, but they don't. And I see it all the time. So I'm glad we're really focusing on this specific issue today, because I think it's important. Peg?
Yeah. Well, you know me well enough, Bruce, to know that I am a goal-oriented person. And you know what? I was thinking this morning, I don't exactly know where that came from. You know, if I look all the way back now, you know, when did it actually start? Why did I feel that I needed to have goals? But I think in the beginning, I just kind of walked around and said, well, this is what I want to do. And remember how I've said so often on the show that I'm a visionary. So I kind of have little movies going around in my head, and sometimes they're black and white and sometimes they're in color. But that's how I believe I started to say, okay, you know what? Now I need to start writing some of this down, because you have these visions and your wishes and wants. And so I think goals are a good way of just getting organized, not only your personal life, but your financial life. And then writing something down is a little bit more committal, and putting timelines to things like that. So part of that is just self-awareness. You know, what is it that you would like your life to be? And we, of course, focus on money. And, you know, because money is, maybe it is an evil for some people, but it actually gets us to what we want in life. And maybe it is traveling. Maybe you want to help out your family, your children, pay for their college, you know, give money to charities, that kind of thing. So we tend to focus on, like you said, Bruce, what's important to people. And that comes down to values. But do you remember, we have these set of cards where there's like 50 different values on these cards. And then we went go through this exercise, and then we would narrow it down to what's the top five, like what's really important to us. Because I think we can get overwhelmed, Bruce, in thinking our list is so long. But if you make it so big and long, then you never really accomplish. So narrowing down what is important to you, but we usually say, you know, the top five. So an example is, you know, family, freedom, education, giving back, your health, maybe adventure. Those are values. And that's what we try to pull out of our clients or prospective clients, what's important to them, because it really does relate to your money. Bruce?
Yeah, you know, and I like what you said, Peg, and you are a visionary, and I'm not tooting your horn, but I've known you, you know, 30 years, and you are. That's just the way you're wired. And I'm kind of wired that way also. And again, I'm not tooting my horn either, but I think for you and I, some of these things that we talk about came very naturally. No one taught us. It was just sort of instinctive behavior. For other people, it's not, and they need to work a little harder at it, and sometimes it's our job to help them do that. And we've talked about this on the show before. Sometimes I'll encounter a prospective new client and I'll talk about goals and objectives and core values and what's important to them. And they can absolutely tell me. And they, in fact, they get demonstrative and enthusiastic and excited. And other times I get this deer in the headlights look like, what are you talking about? And then it's, I think it's our job to kind of help them look within themselves and determine what is important to them. What are they trying to accomplish? You know, I'll often say, look, if you engage our services, what's a win? What's going to make you look back 3 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and say, boy, that was a good decision to go see Bruce or Peg or Wealth Enhancement Group because I was able to accomplish A, B, and C. What do we want to do together? Where are we trying to get to? Somebody smarter than me once said, if you don't have a goal, any road will take you where you want to go because you don't know where you're going. We want to help clients determine where they want to go and how to get there. And again, for some people, it's easier than others, Peg.
Yeah, so I think obviously having goals, I feel like you accomplish, you know, even in the short term versus the long term. So we've always said on this show, and it's have a plan, make a plan, have a plan, make a plan. Well, when you have these goals, it's great to have them, but then you have to start planning around them. You know, people, Bruce, you say this, I bet, every week, you know, people who have a plan do better than that don't. So behavior has a lot to do with it. You already said, Bruce, about, you know, we are all unique. We all have our own makeup. Goals were easy for us to write down and you know, have that vision. But not everybody is like that. So first, you have to kind of do some self-awareness, you know, who am I, what do I want to achieve? You know, you're starting asking yourself questions. And I think the question part is really important. And when it comes to goals, I have to say, because we have a little bit more time than normally when I just squeeze this in a show, is that the SMART goals, you know, and that's just an acronym for specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and time-bound. Well, that's a good start. Is first you need to say, specific, what do I want? You can't be really, really broad about your goal. You have to have some way of measuring it in the short term, and then kind of this vision long term, you know, what would actually happen. So once again, you're creating this picture, but you're writing it down. Measurable is just tracking your progress. And if you can't measure something, you can't possibly see how you're performing or say, hey, give me some accolades, you know, clap for yourself. You need shorter time frames to be able to do that. And then achievable. I know sometimes, Bruce, I put things out there and say, I want to do this. But you still have to be practical. It just can't be too hard, but it actually can't be too easy. So that's hard to do, right? You need to be somewhere in between. And then just time bound. You need a time frame for your goal. So if you say 10 years, I'm going to get this done, I can already tell you it's not going to happen. You know, you have to have these milestones. You need this time bound measurement to be able to say, hey, I did this. And even if it's a time frame where it's a week from now, hey, I accomplished this, because that's kind of how we're all wired. Bruce?
Yeah. And And again, I love that SMART. I love that acronym. You do that so well. And I love also, Peg, you know, you talked about a few minutes ago, you know, we ourselves as advisors at Wealth Enhancement Group have gone through a similar exercise, because to be able to do it with our clients, I think you have to first put the microscope or study yourself. So we've determined, you know, as people, not just as financial advisors, but as people, what are our core values? And I, you know, I have mine memorized and have for a long time when I went through that exercise. Mine are meaningful work, family, health, loyalty, and integrity. And there's no right or wrong answer. Those are my top five. And I try to use that in who I am in being a financial advisor, and also recognizing that sometimes decisions that clients are going to make are based on who they are, their core values, and I have to, as an advisor, be able to separate my priorities from their priorities when I advise them, to make sure I'm giving them the best possible advice for them. So I have to put myself in their place, walk in their shoes, if you will, but still never lose sight of who I am as a person that drives who I am as an advisor. So, Peg, this is all good stuff, but let's give listeners something specific that they can use and take. I think we came up with a list of five things in terms of aligning money with meaning, five steps to help people do this.
Right. So number one was having a goal. Number two is having a plan, which I talked about. Number three is implementing that plan, because now actually this is the tough part, right? You have this plan, you know what your values are, you know what your goals are, you've written them down, you're now specific, but now you need to implement them. So the heavy lifting begins. And I would say, even for me, even though I'm the person that writes them down, has measurements, that kind of thing, it's hard. You know, it's life gets in the way. This is my quote. You know, life is what happens when you're making other plans. And it's not my quote. It's one that I love to say. Life is what happens when you're making other plans, because I have all these goals and aspirations and things that I want to do, but it's not easy. So you really have to believe that you want to get it done. So, you know, some things like healthy habits, writing a budget, you know, trimming expenses, that kind of thing. You're implementing your plan now of how you're going to achieve with these goals. Number four is control your directions, tracking your progress. I said this kind of in the SMART goal-oriented things, is that you need to track your progress, and then you can redirect. If you made it too hard on yourself, you know, back up and do these baby steps, which it seems like, well, why would this be so hard? Why would this take so long? People tend to, you know, have too long of a vision, or sometimes too short of a vision. You need to regroup. And then the five is just throwing out this discouragement for yourself. I mean, we all can beat ourselves up. There's no question about that. And pursuing goals are difficult, and you're going to have mistakes. It happens. And then it just, you know, life gets in the way. And so you may have to just throw some out and regroup on your goals, because the last thing you want to do is be down on yourself that you're not. And some people just throw in the towel, Bruce. They just say, you know what, this isn't working. And my advice would be, once again, just go back and maybe start with some baby steps and get back on track. Bruce?
Yeah, just to add a little bit, that's really good, Peg. Thanks for giving those five things, and we'll probably repeat those as we chat a little bit more here. But what, you know, one of the things that always strikes me, you know, the first thing on our list is to have a goal. And we've been talking about this, you know, for the last, you know, 12 minutes or 13, 14 minutes, that it's easy to say have a goal. It's harder to do. And again, it starts with, in, you know, looking inside yourself, inflection, and deciding what's important to you. What are your priorities? What do you want to accomplish? What legacy do you want to leave behind? You have to ask yourself those questions. What kind of lifestyle do you want at retirement? What age do you hope to be able to retire? Where are you going to live? What is life going to look like? And then with the, when you understand your priorities and what's important to you, it gets easier to set a goal, and I think it gets easier to stay with a plan. But, Peg, the other thing I wanted to hit on, and you did such a good job of bringing it up, this isn't always easy, and it doesn't always go perfectly. I always tell clients, look, we're going to have a plan, but we have to be able to have a plan that's adaptable, because things won't always go perfectly. There will be roadblocks that will get in our way that we either have to go around them, go over them, or figure out a way to get past them. You don't just throw in the towel and say, well, I had a roadblock, now I'm going to quit. You have to be, be persistent. So again, it gets down to it. All these things, I think, are easier if you know where you want to go and where you want to end up. If you know what you want your life to look like when you retire, and at what age you want to retire, and how much you want to give to charity, and how much you want to help your kids, it gets easier to stick with the plan if you keep sight of those ultimate goals and destinations that you want to get to. So again, we start with a goal, then we have a plan. Plans are not always perfect. We have to make adaptations. We have to make changes along the way, and that's normal. But we don't throw in the towel and give up on the plan. Peg?
Yeah, and I would say probably the biggest aha moment for us as the advisor sitting in front of not just one person, a lot of times it's two. And so their values may not match. Their goals, they kind of they tell me what they want in words, and then we start writing down, okay, well, that's a good goal. And then it's interesting to see how different they each are and what their wishes and wants are, but it's still our job to take all that information and create a plan for the two of them. And so I wanted to bring that up because it is an exercise that maybe sounds like, I'm not doing that. Well, it's really important maybe for the other person that is your partner that wants to do it and wants to be involved, and then having these goals and knowing that you can rely on each other to stay on track. Because I think it's almost easier to have kind of a buddy system than it is just to do it yourself. So, Bruce, I wanted to bring that up because that then ties into your money, the objectives that you illustrate to us as advisors, that it's easier for us if we know all that detail so we can keep you in the right direction long term.
Yeah, that's a great point. And sometimes, Peg, you mentioned that partners might not see the world the same way. And I will tell everybody listening, there's always a solution. I've sat in a lot of meetings where two people, one sees black, one sees white, and they think, okay, we're never going to be in alignment or in agreement on our core values or what's important to us or what we want to do. And I will tell you, you can always find a compromise. You could always find a solution that makes everybody happy. I've been doing this over 40 years. I don't think I've ever had a case where we could not get this figured out to both clients' satisfaction. And then the last note, I think we're getting close to being almost out of time, but the last point I want to make, and we've kind of talked about it, is the plan needs to be adaptable. There's going to be roadblocks. There's going to be reasons to change the plan. Things like getting a promotion, making more money, getting sick, losing a job. These are all reasons to go look and review the plan. But sometimes people want to make changes for not good reasons. The wrong person won the election, or the Fed's going to do this to interest rates. Those are not reasons to change the plan. Life-changing events are reasons why you might want to change the plan. Denny, are we about due for a break?
Yes, indeed we are, Bruce and Peg, and let's invite our listeners to join in on this conversation. Any financial question, any and all financial questions this morning, now is your chance to call us or text us. Here's the number for either a phone call or a text question, 651-461-9226. I'll give you that again. You can call or text our studio line right now with your financial question, 651-461-9226. 9226. We'll take this brief break and back with more of your money. If you have a financial question for Peg or Bruce, you can call this number 24/7. Keep in mind, 888-6-ADVICE. You can also email those questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. But right now, during the show, you can call or text our studio line 651 416-461-9226. Once again, here's Senior Vice President, Financial Advisor Peg Webb, and the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group, Financial Advisor Bruce Helmer.
Thank you, Denny Long. Thank you, listeners. If you joined us late, Peg and I have been talking about aligning money with meaning, your core values, what's important to you, what are you trying to accomplish with regard to your personal financial decisions. And Peg, I think we probably exhausted or did kind of covered everything that we wanted to cover, and we can let listeners drive the second half of the show. But also, we sometimes feel guilty from time to time in that if we have a particularly busy week with a lot of questions and we don't get to them all, we feel guilty that we don't. So we've stockpiled some questions from previous weeks that we did not get to, and we can probably hit on some of those today, as well as, like Denny said, get listeners involved right now as well with a text or a phone call. But Peg, do you have anything from our list or anything that you're, again, just hearing out there from clients and prospective clients that you seem to hear the same question or too frequently, or lead us into what you think is a good one that has universal appeal for most of our listeners? Peg?
Yeah, I would just like to thank all listeners because we have many, many, many questions come in. And by the way, if we didn't answer your question online, we do have our financial planning team investigate your questions and circle back. So that is something newer that we're doing. And so make sure that you do text and call us because we do want to get you the answer from our roundtable. So here's one that I loved. It's my wife and I have multiple defined benefit pensions bringing in about $12,000 a month. Wow, that is unbelievable. We always wondered how much we'd have put away to generate that kind of monthly income if we didn't have these defined benefit plans. Any idea how we go about calculating that? Bruce, do you want to start? Or do you want me to?
No, I
read the question. So now I'm all off kilter because normally you read the question or Denny reads the question and then I answer. And so,
no, I know there is a way to do that calculation. It's not something I can do in my head right now. Well, yeah, I know we could do that calculation.
Yeah, so this is really, really fun. When I meet clients that have a retirement plan and it's fixed income that they can rely on, I don't always get this question, but I usually lead with this because I feel like these pensions are kind of understated as to how valuable they are. So if you have $12,000 a month, that's $144,000 a year of income that you can count on while you're both alive. I don't know in this specific case if they took 100% survivor for each, if they took 50%, or they said, okay, if one passes away, we're not going to have our pension, you know, go on to the next person. But if you have $144,000 a year, I usually use, because interest rates were really low, I'd use something like 3 or 3.5% that they would earn. On what kind of money would they earn to get that 144? Well, in this case, it's $3.5 million or close to $4 million that they would have had to save to create this 144,000. I mean, this number isn't one I see, Bruce, often, $12,000 a month. And the fact that both people are on a defined benefit plan, I don't see that often either. But in this case, they're in super good shape. I don't know what they spend per month, but it is something that's nice to have. Bruce?
Yeah, that's an incredibly good pension or combination of pensions. And Peg, yeah, you must have looked at the question and done a little math prior to the show today to know that number off the top of your head, because I think it would take me a little longer than that to just figure it out. But that, again, I'm glad you did that because it's a great example of the type of work that we can do. And I think it was just last week, we did talk a little bit about pensions, or again, the technical term is a defined benefit plan. And we don't see those very often anymore. So to have a married couple each with such an attractive defined benefit plan is unusual, and that's a very high amount of income. Well, what we see a lot more often now is defined, what's called a defined contribution plan, a 401k, a 403b, a 457, where you don't know what you're going to be able to withdraw out of the plan when you retire, but you define how much you put into it every year in terms of your participation or your investment in the plan, and then oftentimes there's a matching contribution from your employer. But to have these pensions with this guaranteed income is a huge advantage in terms of your financial success, and it also is going to influence, Peg, the advice that we give on the other investment dollars that they have available to them, if they have a pension or not. That's really going to influence the advice that we give and the decisions that a client can make or not make. It really gives them a lot more leverage, I think, to have that guaranteed income. And then lastly, when we do encounter people with these pensions, Peg, as you know, oftentimes they're not sure what to do. Peg, you mentioned they have different options, and we also talked about this last week. You have to differentiate between a pension from a public employee versus the private sector. But if you run into somebody with a pension in the private sector, usually that pension plan is going to give them different options on how they can draw that pension. You can take the full amount, but if you do that and you pre-decease your partner or your spouse, there may not be any income left for them. So you say, well, I don't want to leave them high and dry if I die first, so I'll take a smaller dollar amount that will continue if I die first. So we help people determine if they have a pension, what's the best way for them to take that pension based on the various options they have. And again, that type of planning is standard operating procedure financial planning that we provide all the time. And then the question like we had from the texter, what kind of lump sum would it take to create the same kind of income? We could absolutely do that also, and Peg did it for us. Thanks, Peg. Anything else on that one, Peg, or another question you want to bring up?
Yeah, the only other thing I would add is, so in this case, it was $4 million. So when we do our circle of all your assets that can create income, a lot of times I'll put that $4 million down on the financial plan just to continue to remind people what that value is on that pension. So, yeah, here's another great one. I'm kind of picking and choosing my favorites. So my son will be graduating in May in finance and accounting and wants to become a financial advisor. And they actually have an exclamation mark behind it. Where is a good place to start, or what job should he start with to get into, you know, that kind of line of work? And then they say, enjoy your show. Bruce?
Boy, that's a really good question. You know, there's a lot of different roads that one can take. At Wealth Enhancement Group, I would say, you know, our advisors are already experienced, successful advisors. If we bring on a new advisor, I would say our company is not a good place to be coached up to be an advisor. We tend to attract people that have already been successful advisors. But having said that, we have had people that have started in different roles within our company and want a career path to be an advisor, and we've given them that opportunity to grow from within. But in terms of new to the industry, Peg, I think there's some firms, some places that their business model actually accounts for that. They know they're going to hire college graduates and coach them up from the ground up. And again, a lot of people want to be in our industry and not necessarily be a client-facing advisor, but they want to be in some sort of a support role. They want to be a financial planner and crunch numbers and do spreadsheets behind the scenes, or they want to be in an investment management team and run the portfolios that we run for our clients. So there's a lot of different roles, but to do what you and I do, it's you really have to kind of pay your dues, if you will. You usually just don't get thrust into that chair without some other industry experience somewhere else first. I'm sure you can add to that.
Yeah, it's interesting in that when I started so long ago, I accepted a position, what was called the back office. And the back, the kind of the back room is where, now I'm relating myself, is where the physical stock certificates and the physical bonds were kept. And it was behind a steel door, because these things were able to be cashed in at that time. So anyway, so my first job was to alphabetize the stock certificate. I mean, I had that thing that went from A to Z, and I would put General Mills in the G slot and, you know, 3M and in the M slot, that kind of thing. And what I want to mention to the young people out there who want to be a financial advisor, because I think it's a very good career and job, is that you have to be eager to want to learn when you get in a place. Don't try to get the high level job right off the bat, right? If you get in and you're eager and you have a lot of questions, my manager at the time, I would ask him to stay, you know, probably once a week, because I was write down lists of questions because I knew nothing about the stock bond industry. And I give a lot of credit to him because he took the time. And then finally he said, Peg, you better go to the University of Minnesota to extension classes on these investments, because you are so eager to learn, and this would be a good way for you to learn outside your employment here. So a lot of times finding a mentor is probably a big key to your success. So those are things that are kind of out of the box, Bruce, but I want to share, because it doesn't mean that you have to get the big high job right away. You need to, you know, maybe take a job that you see you can create a longer term position within that company, or find a mentor that will help you, because there's a lot of us out there that are willing to help. Bruce?
Well, that last sentence is where I was going to go next, Peg. And again, I'll pay you a compliment. I've done some of this, but I think you've done more than I have. You have mentored a lot of advisors, and you love to do that. You love to mentor younger advisors, and you're so good at it, and you're so giving and so selfless with your time to help other people. It's not inappropriate, or it's not you being boastful. Talk a little bit about some of the mentoring that you've done with young people in this industry.
Well, yes, I probably have had 20, you know, part of being with a company that started small and now very large, it created a lot of opportunity for the people that I hired on my team. And so one of the, probably the aha moments for me is when I would see a team member grow so quickly and then also get another position within our company with growth. And so once again, I believe if you can find a Peg Webb, somebody that's willing to mentor. Now, what I would tell you also is I was, I was pretty direct about, you know, if I saw that these people had a lot of value and I could see it in them, then I kind of drove them to be maybe more than they wanted. And so I've got a little reputation about, because when I see something that's great, I'm like, okay, let's go, you know, and not everybody's ready to go when I want them to go. So once again, I just love that this person wants to become a financial advisor. There is such a need because of the 2008-2009 crisis, believe it or not, young people did not go into our industry. They were taken back that this can be this dramatic and what kind of role would I have in that industry. So there is a shortage. So I'm glad that this person is going to go and attempt to be a financial advisor, but it may not happen overnight. You need to have patience. And that's something the younger people today, I don't see as much of that as I did years ago. Bruce?
Well, I just want to say you are a great mentor. And I was kind of laughing. I'm just going to say it. If you mentor somebody, Peg, you're a stern taskmaster. You have high expectations, and that's good. That's a good thing. You don't ever have to apologize for that. You are a stern taskmaster if you're coaching somebody up. And again, maybe we're beating this to death, but there's a lot of different roads you can take if you want to be in this industry. What I look for in people is empathy, you know, characteristics of a good advisor, honesty, integrity, empathy, communication skills. Sometimes the most technically proficient person that can run spreadsheets, run models, write algorithms are not necessarily good advisors if they don't have good people skills and they can't articulate what they know to somebody else. So you have to have the ability to teach and coach and explain things in a way that people can understand and digest and use the information. But there's a lot of different ways that you can get there. You and I took different paths. My associate advisor, who will one day run my team when I leave the company, which is not going to be anytime soon, I don't think, they came in a completely different career path. They had an education that didn't have anything to do with personal finance, but they came on board as an intern. I saw potential immediately. Anything I gave her to do, she picked it up instantly. She was proactive. She would do things before I even told her to do them, and she just grew, and she's going to be ultimately a senior advisor, but she took a very different path. But there's no right or wrong way to do that. If you have a passion for it, if you have an insatiable curiosity, if you have empathy for people, if you want to help other people, you can get there, but there's just a lot of different roads to go. Denny, let's take one from today. The questions so far have been old ones. People are probably asking some questions today. Let's take one of those.
Yeah, absolutely. We do have a bunch of them. Here's the first one. Can you address the new Social Security benefits that were just signed into law? What does it mean if I am a retired teacher / principal and will collect my first check in February?
Peg, we talked about that a little bit last week. I think you understand it better than I do. Can you review that again?
Yeah, so what was the question again, Denny? I'm sorry.
The listener wants you to address the new Social Security benefits that were just signed into law. The question is, what does it mean if I am a retired teacher or principal and will collect my first check in February?
So I'm not sure. But it did come into law. So the in the past, if you had a government pension, And you were a firefighter, a policeman, something like that, you didn't get your credits for Social Security. And it's been 50 years that it's been this way. And what happened is what was happening is the person, let's say the husband was the firefighter and the pension maybe went away, or the surviving spouse only got 50% of that pension, and they didn't get this Social Security that we all in the other private sector get. So what happens is they change that now so that the people who had those jobs have a Social Security so that they could utilize it and then also have a spousal continuation in Social Security. Now, there's a lot of controversy this week because a lot of people are saying, you know, how are we going to pay for that? They're a fan of people getting it, but they're not a fan of all this debt that we're going to have, and they are waiting for the resolution of where all this money is going to come from. But when it comes to being a teacher or a principal and your check coming, I don't understand really what that question is. If it's the amount that you're worried about, as to how long it's going to take, if there's a spousal continuation, all of those things, you may want to just directly call and get some information if you have questions on your particular payment that you're getting. Bruce?
Yeah, I don't think in education the new law is going to be impactful to you at all, I don't think. In education, they have a pension, usually TRA, Teachers Retirement Association, and you can still draw your Social Security. I don't think the change is going to impact you. I think whatever you've seen on Social Security as your estimates in the past are probably still going to be accurate. I think we can squeeze in one more quick one here. I've got one from a couple weeks ago that we never hit on, Peg. It was somebody, we talk on the show a lot about having beneficiaries on your accounts. And somebody had asked the question, you emphasize declaring beneficiaries. My beneficiary insists on a regular accounting on how much they're entitled to as a beneficiary. He says it's his right by law. Is that true? Is this a drawback of having beneficiaries on accounts, lack of privacy? And the answer is, that's hogwash. The beneficiary doesn't have any rights. The beneficiary doesn't even have to know that they are a beneficiary. If I wanted to name Peg Webb as a beneficiary on one of my accounts, I can do that. She might not even know, and she doesn't have any rights to know how much money I'm going to leave her. So the person that asked me that question, the person that told you that they're entitled to know, that simply is not true. I've never heard of that before. That's actually a little bit silly. Peg, anything to add, or we're getting close to the end here?
Well, the only thing is I admire the going and saying that to someone, you know, to say, I need to know what I'm going to get. So that's not kosher. That's not the way it works.
All right. I think we're out of time, Danny.
Yes, indeed we are. And by the way, if you do have a financial question midweek, you can just call this number anytime, 888-6-ADVICE. Email those questions, sure, yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Again, 888-6-ADVICE with your financial question. We'll be back next week with more of Your Money.